Okay, so present, if we can just go around the room, do a roll call. It's Arvin Rhodes, Executive Director.
Danny Vandeventer, Deputy Director.
Susan Baker, Site Supervisor.
Shelley Colclo, TC Counselor.
Sasha Avanesov, Clinical Site Supervisor.
Alan Vandeventer, TC Counselor.
And we'll ask the other staff when they arrive to introduce themselves. So the reason why we've requested this meeting is going to be a two-part meeting. It is, if there's going to be any interactive part, it'll be in the second half of the meeting. The first half, Danny and I are just going to state what the state of affairs are. Okay. And there's a reason why right now this meeting is regarding the TC staff team. Okay. So that's all we're focused on. We're not worried about the other team. The other team will have their own focus. Okay. This team is basically at the most level of dysfunction that I've ever experienced in my time being with this organization. It starts from the top and worked its way all the way down. And every single member of the team is responsible and plays their own part directly, indirectly, consciously, or subconsciously. They play a part. Now, everyone in their own mind can determine what varying degrees they think they play, or if any, okay? But there can be no level of dysfunction at this height where everyone has not played a part in it getting to this point. And in order for it to be corrected, one of two things will have to happen. Either the team will have to buy into certain concepts that ensure that the level of dysfunction that currently exists disappears, okay? And we're not saying that there's not going to be some level of dysfunction. That's humanly impossible when human beings are together as a team, a family, a unit, whatever you want to call it. We're all individuals. We all bring our own frames of references to the table, our own experiences, levels of knowledge, education, etc., okay? So there's always going to be some level of dysfunction. But what the goal is that that level is so manageable that it does not impact the goal of the team. And that there are leaders and other parties who may be experienced persons, they may not be in leadership positions, but they hold experience, okay, that participate in ensuring that the dysfunction is managed and kept to a minimum so that the team can stay on track with its goal and its ultimate purpose. That is not the case. So either the team does what is needed to eliminate that high level of dysfunction, or the team gets disbanded, meaning that certain people just can't work here. Two things aren't going to happen. We are not going to go into the organized delivery system at a high level of dysfunction, which only ensures that we will not achieve our mission. And the second one, which is probably personally the most disturbing to me, which is we are getting ready to, I believe you guys have selected a new program assistant. So you are ready to bring another person onto the team into an existing dysfunctional atmosphere. And I'm presuming that the person that you have selected has some level of intellect, common sense, and perception. That within a week, they can figure out what's going on, who the players are. And then, unfortunately, they're left with one of three choices. Choose a camp, which camp they're going to be in, or isolate themselves. And in essence, those are two very poor choices right now. We don't want them to choose a camp because they're going to be choosing a dysfunctional camp. And we don't want them to isolate themselves because we want them to engage on the team and become a fully embraced member of the team. Can you please grab a chair? So that's very concerning to me that we're getting ready to bring somebody in to an environment like this. So I'm going to rattle off some things, and Danny has some things on her own that she might rattle off also, or come on top of the things I'm mentioning, because we both discussed some of these same things. So some of the things that have been going on. Staff being disrespectful to the supervisor on the floor and in meetings via body language, rolling their eyes, sighing, etc. Staff bad-mouthing other staff to each other and other staff members. Bad-mouthing other staff within earshots of clients. And if you don't think the clients don't know what's going on, then I have to question what world you're living in. Passive-aggressive comments, and if you don't know what passive-aggressive means, when I'm done with this sentence, raise your hand. Passive-aggressive comments about other staff members or supervisor decisions on the floor with clients. Staff doing things outside the realm of their job responsibilities. I spoke in July of 2015 when I informed the staff of the changes coming forth in the system at the state and the county level and within the OCG organization as a result, and how everything was on the table to be changed, including the roles of staff, their titles, their positions, etc. All of those things were spoken to. The clinical team does not feel respected by the TC team. The TC team does not feel respected by the clinical team. I'll stop there. Do you want to add?
On that particular note or other things?
Either. It's fine.
I'll go on because I'm sure we'll revisit that. So just a little bit more on the stepping outside of one's role. So there ends up being a lot of complications around people making recommendations about what clients need or don't need in terms of mental health and medication and things like that. If there's a concern, the appropriate response is to go to the clinical supervisor or to go to me or clinician and say, I have concerns about this. Is this on your radar? They're asking for this in this story. What has happened more than one occasion that is really concerning is we have conversations happening, family members visit, and there's conversations about medication, there's conversations about where they're going to refer to, that kind of thing. Keep in mind that we cannot talk to anyone outside of probation without a release. And so what needs to happen is, I don't know anything about that, you'll have to either talk to your client, or if there's a release, someone will talk to you. So really a lot of stepping outside of roles in terms of making recommendations. I've heard people, say, I think this is what's going on with them diagnostically. So there's a lot of really gray things that are happening that shouldn't be gray. It's really inappropriate. It really, the clients don't understand. We've had a lot of complaints from the clients, a lot. So I'm sure we'll go over that more. A little more about the releases. If somebody calls and they want to talk to someone, you have to look and see if we have a release. You can't even say that the person's here. It doesn't matter if they're related to them. It doesn't matter if they visited them last Sunday. You have to say, I actually don't have a release to speak with you. And if you do see them, say you're here when they're visiting or they stop by, then you can chat with them, but you can't say anything about the client at all. So unless there's a release for that specific person. There has been many, many conversations about clients with people who there are no releases for. So unless it's probation or there's a release, it's a huge violation. Complaining about how things are done now versus how they used to be is ongoing. And the reality is that we would have had to close our doors if we continued to do things the way they used to be. That's not what is now available to our clients. And with the organized delivery system, it is different. And there's a lot of things that are different. And instead of blaming, you know, like, well, this isn't happening anymore, or I'm not sure exactly who's being blamed for this. I mean, I honestly think I'm really grateful that we're still here, frankly. But there's a lot of blaming of, well, who's doing this, and this shouldn't be this way. And whether you're blaming me or Orville or the county or whatever, it's not helpful. It doesn't resolve anything. And things have changed. And if people can't buy into the fact that things have changed and they're different, this probably isn't the best place to be. Because it really is a very different world now, and things are treated differently. There are often concerns about if clients are referred out. This has come up many, many times. I've had many staff members come up to me and be concerned about, why is this person leaving, etc. And the reality is that if it's not substance use primarily, they need to be referred out. This is not the best treatment for them then. It's not. It's not in their best interest. And so we're acting what's in the client's best interest. It's not the role. The role of the TC folks is to work with behavior and help. There's so many excellent tools in the TC that are incredibly therapeutic, and to instead focus on, you know, mental health, it's not the role. And then not directly speaking to each other about concerns. I can't even tell you how often I have had people come to me with concerns about other people. It's fine. You can say you have a concern about somebody, but I expect that there's a conversation first about that person. If I'm concerned with Sasha, I need to talk to Sasha before I go to Orville. And try to have that communication and that open dialogue. A lot of what's happening with the passive-aggressive stuff and the comments are because people aren't directly addressing each other. I have a concern that you did this, or I'm wondering why this happened, or I heard this, or I want to talk about this. It's really easy and straightforward. And so then the comments and the blaming and all that stuff doesn't happen if we're getting our needs met by directly dealing with it. When we don't get our needs met, that's where it goes all over the place. And expecting someone else to meet our needs without knowing what they are is not reasonable.
Can you introduce yourself to the group, please?
Yes. My name is Luis Amaya. And
what's your title? What's your position?
My title is a counselor. And so,
can you get a chair, please? I just want you to introduce yourself for the record because we're taping the meeting. Why is this team undermining the supervisor? Why is the supervisor allowing themselves to be undermined? See how there's both responsibility there? The persons who are doing the undermining, whether they're aware of it or not aware of it, and the person who is being undermined, okay, there's a responsibility there. Why are staff members undermining other staff members? Doesn't even have to be a supervisor. And it is allowed to happen. Can you please state your name and your title, please, for the record?
Joe David Deere, certified counselor. Been here 3 years.
What's your position?
PC staff.
Thank you. Does anyone want to give an example of undermining?
Get in that direct...
No. When I say give an example, I don't mean a generic. I mean, I'll give an example of how I undermined. That's an example.
Susan Baker has asked me to finish a UIR, and I haven't completed it that same day. and then it gets forgotten about for a couple days, and then I revisit it and I remember about it.
In the big picture, yes, that's undermining because you're not doing your job. You're not doing something you were asked to do. That's not what I'm talking about. Okay? When we talk about undermining someone, we're not talking about that. Okay? Although that, yes, can be considered undermining. If your attitude was, yeah, okay, F you, I'm not doing it. Okay? Then you're undermining. Okay? That's not what I'm talking about. I don't believe people are going, when they get assigned to UR and they say, F you, I'm not doing it. Do I believe decisions are being questioned behind closed doors, questioned with clicks on or off the property? Absolutely. Do I believe everyone is part and parcel to it? Absolutely. Do I believe there's backbiting, gutter sniping, and the whole nine yards? Absolutely. That's what I'm talking about. By the way, I think it's important for everyone here and everyone who will be listening to the audio to know that the person in the room that should be thanked that this meeting is happening is the deputy director. Because she's the one who believes that this can be fixed, solved, redirected, and a new path forged. Attitudes adjusted, corrected, changed. Behaviors adjusted, corrected, changed. She had to sell me on that. Because 2 weeks ago, I was in a very different place. And I had a very different course of action in my mind. So let's understand the reason why we're all sitting in this room. And that is the faith that someone has exhibited in believing that this group, including the four people that aren't present, okay, that are a part of this team, okay, that the group, okay, can do what is going to be required of them to do within the time frames that we're going to mandate that there be measurable change in the team's behavior. Because if there's not measurable change, then my idea is going to come to fruition. So with that stated, does anyone want to give me an example of undermining? Otherwise, I'll give examples.
I think in the beginning, when you started listing what you foresaw as wrong, I know that there has been in staff meetings comments made when somebody else has expressed something. There has been the eyes rolling. There has been the huffing and puffing. And those are things that I see as undermining.
Who's guilty of that?
I know myself has been.
Okay. Anybody else guilty of that?
I probably have been. I think I have been.
What about the clicking? Been bad-mouthing other staff to other staff members.
I think I've done that, honestly.
Well, let's get real now.
Yeah.
If we don't get real, don't preach to the clients to do something which you yourself cannot do.
I've had more than one staff member come to me and say, such and such was complaining about this person to me. So I've heard it many, many times.
I can say I've been I don't know if the word is guilty, but I'll just keep it real for myself, that I've heard different sides of a situation, and not knowing really as far as what to take of it, because I haven't grown in this, you know, facility and for years with other peers, I just kind of, and knowing that how things kind of run, I guess what I'm trying to express is I've been influenced to have my own thoughts and preconceived notions about someone, but always being very careful. Just really coming here to work, so, yeah.
What did you just state? I'm confused. Now, which point were you trying to make?
That I've been, I guess I've been influenced in my own thoughts and so forth. So.
All right, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but let me see if you correct me if what I'm stating is not what you mean. Are you saying that you have been influenced negatively by other staff behavior?
Of what? Sure.
Or is it that you've been influenced by what other staff have said about another person?
That's even correct.
In what way have you been influenced?
Just
when I say that, I mean, as a result of that, what did you then do?
I'm sorry, I just feel a little nervous, but
sorry.
It's okay.
Let me help you. Did it cause you to behave a certain way, or did it cause you to, if you believed whatever you were presented with was either inappropriate or felt wrong or what have you, that you just didn't take any action on it?
So I guess, I've been influenced to just kind of a little bit more like speak my mind in regards to a staff member, but that's also in part because I've been pushed. Now, and what I mean by push is basically that individual, I don't really like naming names, but what I'm saying is has really allowed me to express myself, and I feel more attacked, and so therefore I've come out a little bit more on the defense side. And what I mean by defense is just really letting that person know that, you know, this person, doesn't let me talk or anything of that nature. And so I've just been a little bit aggressive, but I think they understood the point. So that's what I mean. Influence in regards to other individuals, you know, that have said, hey, you know what, yeah, that person or that staff member might be a little difficult to talk to. And so that's what I mean by influence. So I hope that kind of makes sense, but if not, we can talk about it off the record, I guess. So.
Well, me personally, I don't understand what you're trying to say. Mm-hmm. And if you want to talk about it off the record, this is part of my point, is that if, using you as an example, if you had an issue with something, a staff person, something that was said, done, or what have you, that you believe to be inappropriate, wrong, or impacting your work environment negatively, okay, at what point would someone speak to it, to their supervisor? Or would they just sit with it and allow it to continue, fester?
Thank you for clarifying that. So I guess, when I do the check-ins, relieving Renee, it gets very difficult to just kind of do a quick little switch as far as, turning over the minutes. And if there's something that I need to inform her, it's like, you know, she'll stop me right then and there. And if I want to go ahead and just kind of give a little side comment of an additional information, it's just like she just keeps on going and going and going and going. And so therefore, I come in and so forth. I know sometimes she likes her space. So it's, for example, I come in, I want to go ahead and check in, get a little cup of coffee. I'll sometimes bring outside food. and I want to give her a little space. And I'll say, hey, listen, I'll be going outside in the dining room just to kind of eat and so forth and see what's going on. And from there, you know, it's like, well, I kind of need you here. And so it's like the next week, you know, I'm there, but I can't say, you know what I mean? Just very controlling, I guess, is the word. And so I just kind of stay out of her radar and just, you know, allow basically for her just to kind of do herself. And if she needs me, I'll respond to her. So just kind of feel I can't really interact in a way. So that has pushed me to be a little bit more on the defensive side. And as a matter of fact, previously, a couple of weeks ago, from the festering and festering, what you're referring to, is that I told her one time, you know, I came like about 6 minutes late. She tried to compare it to the last time that I was a little bit earlier. And it's, I just kind of got fed up and I said, listen, I said, you know, you can't be micromanaging me. I said, I do apologize that I came late, but I have no control over the traffic conditions and so forth. And so, I just said, listen, this is how, you know, we had to close the door because we were kind of going back and forth and we didn't want the clients to hear. So,
well, they already heard you. So not speaking to you specifically, but just as a general thing, when these things arise, no, people don't feel or believe that there's some mechanism available to resolve this, especially if it's something that is continuing and that there's a building frustration or building conflict with a colleague that you have to work with, that you have to conduct professional business with in order for the facility to function properly. So you have this personal thing building up, but no one does anything about it. Or it manifests and leaks out in inappropriate ways. And the losers, other than you personally, are the clients who always find out when there's a problem with staff. I cannot emphasize that enough. So if you think that, oh, we're keeping it undercover, oh, they don't know, or so on and so forth, I don't know if you guys, what world you're living in, that is not how it works in a residential facility. It is no different than living in a family home, okay, and you got two parents, and the parents are either arguing, whatever the case may be, the children eventually figure it out. They eventually figure it out. If the parents aren't careful enough to know when, how, and where to conduct their affairs. So, there's equal responsibility, and I'm going to use you as an example. There's equal responsibility. There's a responsibility for the organization to create the environment where you can feel comfortable enough to go to your supervisor in whatever medium you feel appropriate, leaving a voicemail message, sending a text message, leaving a sending an email, okay? All three would be confidential methods. Writing a letter, whichever way you deem, and say, hey, this is what I'm experiencing during shift change and so on and so forth. I'm uncomfortable with it. I'm not sure quite how to handle it. And then it's the supervisor's job to facilitate resolving that. So the business of the organization and the business of the interpersonal relationship between staff can get back to some level of functionality. It's amazing what happens when two people who may have conflict started by who knows what. Who knows what? No one knows until we dig into it. It could be something totally unrelated to you, has nothing to do with you, you're just the recipient of it. But nobody knows until it's dug into a little bit. What's going on here with the communication? Why are you coming at him this way? You know, et cetera, et cetera. Why aren't you leaving a little early so you're not late? Because maybe she has someplace she needs to go and she has to leave, right, at whatever. Nobody knows. I'm just saying. All of these things can be discussed and the two people can come to a mutual, respectful understanding and realize that it's nothing personal. I haven't known you for 18 years. It's nothing personal. And we can have a very good working relationship. It doesn't mean that we're not going to, as human beings, that we're not going to have flare-ups. We're not going to have flare-ups. But my goodness, can we get to a point where even if we have a flare-up, that we can come back and say, you know what? I was wrong for the way I spoke to you the other day. I apologize. I had some personal things going on, and it just what I said came out wrong. Even if what was being spoken to was accurate, but the way I said it was inappropriate. I shouldn't speak to my colleague that way. So you have to feel comfortable enough that you can go to someone, even if it's a colleague. Hey, how do I handle this when I have an issue with an employee? It doesn't have to be a supervisor. But your colleague may be able to direct you, this is what you should do. And the colleague should be able to do that without becoming what? Without becoming a part of the problem. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, she always does. I don't like that about her either. You're absolutely right. She's a this, she's a that, blah, 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 blah. That's what I mean by gutter sniping, backbiting, and all that stuff. So you become a part of the problem. So now instead of solving the problem, we've just created a triad. Okay? Rather than that colleague saying, I hear what you're saying. I know Renee. We can get to the bottom of this. Let me tell you what you should do. You should contact Susan. You can text her, write her a letter, or phone her, whatever you want to do. Whichever is more comfortable to you. Let her know what you experienced. And she will help you facilitate resolving that. That's what should happen. Or if that colleague is experienced and feels comfortable, okay, they can help you facilitate resolving that. And communicate to the supervisor that, hey, so-and-so came to me. They were having an issue with so-and-so regarding so-and-so. I helped facilitate a resolution. They're okay with it now. They understand, have an understanding, and they've moved forward. So the supervisor is always in the loop. May not have participated, but is always in the loop of what's going on. Always in the loop.
Can I emphasize the part about the professionalism?
Mm-hmm.
So there's being comfortable, which is important, being able to have direct conversations, or if need be, go to the supervisor. But then there's this piece which is about professionalism, which is act as if, that whether I like this or not, I need to either do it, or I need to respond to this, or I need to respond in a way that's professional. And that's really the emphasis. Because that right there, being unprofessional, and if we're loose and we're, you know, making comments and that kind of thing, then the clients are going to do the exact same thing with each other, with the staff. They become more comfortable with the clients. They have the boundaries get skewed, all that kind of stuff. And so, being professional here, in terms of action, in terms of words, all of that is what's really, really, really important.
I have an example of undermining the intent.
Go ahead.
This was an incident that happened, I don't know, last year, I think, when a person told the clients that I could come and pick them up and take them on an emergency run to their pharmacy. It's never happened, and he said, I don't trust that guy around the residence. Okay? He said that to two of them directly. But I contacted Susan, and I talked to Susan Crosby as well, because she knew the other guy. So I felt that it was resolved. I haven't had any problems after that. And definitely not a saint. I've been accused of a lot of things, but not that. And I have definitely vented on occasion when something is not going right, or my fear factor is if this is not done right and I keep doing this, am I going to get the blame for it? So no, sometimes I don't, at times, since I've been here, I haven't always felt safe to come up and just say something. And it's not just this, it's not just EPA, it's everywhere. It feels like sometimes when I say something, speaking for myself, it gets flipped on me all the time. And so I don't feel I don't feel heard. That's what I want to say. I don't feel heard or listened to. But in that instance, that happened. Yeah, that was never, nothing ever came to it. I mean, never came, no negative came back to me. You told Miss Baker this or that. Nothing ever went, so I let it go.
Can you give me a specific example of when you felt not heard?
A couple times in this room and during meetings like this. I have even told Sasha, I said that I've said things and that I was laughed at. So, and I said, I don't even know how I'm going to, you know, I don't feel comfortable to come in and say things. Like right now, I'm like, my anxiety level is off the scale. I've said clients that said this. To me, I would think there's a level here, and then there's extreme behaviors. And instead of, oh, that's just the way they are, take it, you know, I have a very thick skin. If they commented on, like, numerous times how I can take it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times that there was a time that this was just out of control. This was just blatant and disrespectful, and everybody, most people in the room at the time, just laughed it off.
Give me an example of what you would have wanted to hear in response to what you brought to the table that would have made you feel heard, respected, and that what you brought was important information. What kind of response would you have liked to have heard? Give me an example from your perspective.
No laughing and not being dismissed or minimized.
So that's not
even words. Just not the physical reactions that
okay.
spoke louder than words.
Okay. So if I hear you correctly, if someone said, oh, well, it's the clients, it's just how they act, that wasn't as impactful to you as the body language response that you received.
Along with it, yes, the laughing.
Okay.
Dismissing.
Yes. Okay. Does the team hear that?
I do, and yeah, I didn't realize.
I don't think it was not one person. So that's why. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, come to work and just take it out because people are people. You know, but it was in a group setting. It was never, individuals never treated me like that. It was always in a group setting. So that makes me want to shy away.
So here's the problem. If the parties, if the party or parties, plural, are not called on the behavior, then the behavior never gets brought out into the limelight.
I spoke to my colleague here because he's been here a lot longer than I am, and I asked him what I can do
mm-hmm.
to make the situation better. And he told me. So I've been trying to implement that since then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that I automatically want to come in here and complain and bitch, okay? I tried to find out what my part is so that I can change my behaviors so that maybe I would get a different response. I just want to try that first, so.
Right, that's your part.
Correct.
Okay. But remember what I said, I don't know if you were here for the part where I said, there's two responsible parties to this. There's you, there's me. Let's say I'm the other party, okay, that my behavior, my body language was inappropriate. If you speak to Sasha and Sasha gives you advice and tips and how to present yourself and deal with the aftermath of what you experienced and give you some pointers on how to do something different, right? But the person or persons who responded that way, what happens with them?
Well, I have to implement my changing what's wrong with me and see if that's the variable that needs to be changed so that the situation doesn't happen
again.
And
that's what I have a problem with.
If it doesn't, but if it doesn't, then I believe that, yes, it comes out in a different plan B goes into effect. Let's individualize and or group and tell people what's going on and why I feel the same. But I always try to look and see what I can do first, because it takes two, like you said. So where's my part? If that doesn't work, then I'll bring it to the floor.
So I think I actually know what you're talking about in terms of the client.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I remember a meeting where that happened, where there was laughing. And so I apologize profusely if I laughed or if I contributed to that. I think I recall a meeting where that occurred, and I remember there was kind of joking about the client's actions, if it's someone who I'm thinking of. So I'm sorry if I contributed to that, and I absolutely will be aware of that if that comes up again.
Well, I appreciate it, but I just
didn't. No, but it's I'm one of many parts, right? So,
right.
So that's why I don't want you to minimize the other side to it.
Mm-hmm.
You have claimed your side, which is important to claim. What can I do differently? Okay, but there's another side, because even if you claim your side, okay, and the other side never gets addressed, meaning if you think that I'm 100% responsible and if I change this, that will change the dynamic, I'm here to tell you that is not the case. That is not the case. There's something you can do, and there's something I can do. But in order for me to do what I may have to do, what has to happen?
I have to find out exactly what the problem is and help with that person.
No. What has to happen is Orville has to find out through some mechanism that, excuse me, your behavior in the staff meeting, or your behavior in this setting, or your behavior in the staff office, wherever it occurred, was inappropriate. Your response was inappropriate. What you stated was inappropriate. I have to find that out so that the other half of the exchange can also take a look at what they've done. So one side is working, the other side is working. It's not a one-way street, is the point I'm trying to make. So you did the right thing in terms of, okay, what can I do different? Okay? But then the other person or parties don't get to look at what they may have to do different that may have contributed to what your experience was of the meeting. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
Okay. So when Danny talks about professionalism, one of the things I suggested, and she rightly got me off of that, okay, was, see, back in the old days, we just have a staff and county group. Okay? But I got to thinking from what you said, you know what? That's not going to work. Because the only thing that makes a staff encounter group effective is when the staff participate and they put everything on the table. It's no different than with the residents.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
The only thing that makes it effective is if they put it on the table. If you have a staff encounter group and 3/4 of the staff sit there silently, it's not effective. So we push that to the side, because that's actually abnormal in corporate America.
Yeah.
Okay? So we push that to the side, because more people than not in OCG have not experienced that. Okay? More people than not have either come through other environments, whether it's other agencies or academia or wherever, where conflict is resolved in a different way. That's not the way it's resolved. It's resolved in a more, let's say, quote-unquote, professional manner. Okay? But it still involves some conflict resolution mechanisms so that we don't get so far off the rails as a team. And I am curious to know is what prevents this team from utilizing the mechanisms that are available to prevent that from happening? Why does backbiting, gutter sniping, stalking behind each other's backs, not undermining each other, why does that rule rather than the other thing of speaking with each other either honestly and respectfully and with dignity, or using other tools that are available to you? Because not everyone can deal with one-to-one conversation, especially if it involves conflict. Not everybody can do that. So there's other avenues. So if I'm a supervisor, then, okay, I can take that on for you. If that's not something you are comfortable with, that's perfectly fine. That's my job, to take that on for you and help facilitate a resolution. But it can't happen if it never comes to the table. If it never comes to the table.
Yeah, because I want to say I'm sorry you felt like that, or you feel that way.
I didn't think that anyone did it for meanness. I think it was just a reaction, and I believe that people are people, and I didn't feel like every day I come to work I'm laughed at. That's not how I feel, and I feel that as adults, I mean, just like it was said at that meeting, you know, some people, that's the way some people are, or some people laugh because they're nervous, for example. Maybe they were nervous and felt uncomfortable, and it wasn't just about how stupid the statement was. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I had to, like, stop and look at it. I don't just jump. There's a reason why I pounce, and that's because, you know, I feel threatened or not heard. Like I said, when that thing happened with Dorian, I called Susan Baker immediately, and I just said, look, I don't know what fired or anything, but he never worked with me. He doesn't even know me. He's never worked a single shift with me. How could he come to such a conclusion? And so, as far as I know, Susan talked to him, and I know Mr. Crosby has talked to him, so it was done. But I let it go. I don't want to hang on to things. So, that wasn't nearly as extreme as the other.
You mentioned something that I want to bring us back to, okay, in terms of proper roles. Okay, if somebody on the team has a problem with another person on the team, you get to decide what mechanism you're going to use to resolve that in a professional manner. That can be utilizing one of your colleagues who you might feel comfortable with speaking to about the issue and getting advice, suggestions, and help with probably resolving the issue. Okay, and again, the job of that colleague is to be professional, not become part and parcel to the issue, but play a role of helping facilitate. That has not been the case the majority of the time. Okay? So when you go to Susan, and Susan takes on the role of assisting in resolving whatever the conflict may be, minor or major, okay, and you engage her in that way, then becomes Susan's responsibility to communicate to the supervisor, okay, what's transpired, how she has assisted, and where she believes the state of affairs are at this moment regarding this conflict. It then becomes the supervisor's responsibility to take that information and determine whether or not a follow-up is necessary. Hey, Daryl, I understand that so-and-so occurred. I understand that Susan, you spoke with Susan, and that she helped resolve you. Are you okay with where things are at this time? Yes, no, maybe so, what have you. So there's almost this circle of communication that keeps going around to make sure that the person who felt aggrieved, good, bad, or ugly, that it's come back around to find out, are you okay now? Has it been resolved to your satisfaction? Now, what does that do? So, damn, I only spoke to Susan.
Sends.
Okay, and my supervisor's aware of it. My supervisor has followed up with me. Are you okay? Are you satisfied with how things are? Is there anything that you would like me to do further? So you're being put in a position now of taking responsibility, responding and saying yes, no, no, I'm still not okay, or yes, I'm okay, I like the way it's handled, me and the person have resolved it, etc., etc. Okay? So the team is communicating and trying to work out whatever it is the conflict. That's an example of how it's supposed to work. We're not sitting here because that's what has happened, is my point. We're sitting here because overwhelming majority of the time, that's not what happens.
Well, and to tack on to that, not using this example, but just what happens often is that people may try to talk to the person or they'll go to a supervisor and they don't like what the supervisor did, and then that becomes the point of contention. But the reality is that so I may complain to Sasha about something and I don't like what he did, or I complain to Orville and I don't necessarily agree with how he handled that. So if I don't deal with it directly, I can choose. Do I accept that? Do I try to have another conversation with Orville and say, I'm still seeing this again? Do I leave? What do I do with that? But going around and complaining because things aren't happening exactly the way I want them to be, that's what's coming up again and again and again. I think this is the right way to do it. It's not happening the way I want it to be done, so I'm going to complain about it with someone who's going to agree with me. So, it's happening over and over and over. So part of it is I need to speak directly. It may not happen the way I want, but then I also have to trust that my supervisor has dealt with it, but it might not be exactly the way that I want it to be. And I might talk to my supervisor more about that, but if it still isn't, me going to complain many, many times about it over and over and over again is very unprofessional, right? So part of it, too, is can I tolerate and manage that things aren't going to be done exactly the way I want them to be done? If it's not resolved to my satisfaction, do I still try to work with this person? What else do I do? Because that's what I'm seeing so often is people might talk directly and speak directly with them, and then they go to the supervisor, but then they don't like it. And then there's complaining and complaining and complaining. I've seen it many, many, many times, not just on this team, but that goes back to you're going to have to trust and respect your supervisor, or you're going to have to learn to work with your colleagues and figure that out. So there are avenues, but then there's also a point at which, and if it's not done to my satisfaction, what do I do with that? Because that's when people start leaking all over the place. We see it with the clients all the time. Mm-hmm. And then we, as staff, end up doing the same thing.
Neither Danny or I can force the TC staff team to respect the supervisor. We can't force you to do that. The supervisor of the TC team has been told on numerous occasions from a supervisorial perspective role how to go about managing the staff team and ensuring and enforcing the supervisorial role. Okay? If I don't respect her and that manifests itself in various ways, whether in blatant ways, that's what I'm looking for.
Overt.
Whether in overt or covert ways, okay. The responsibility of whether or not that continues rests solely on her shoulders. Do you understand that? That rests solely on your shoulders.
Yes.
Are you sure that you understand that?
I mean, I'm the supervisor. I would like there to be more open lines of communication with me, and I felt that I've always been open. When I do have issues, I pull the staff person into the office. I discuss things with that staff person one-on-one. I don't blast it in front of the whole team. And so sometimes I feel people think I don't do anything when actually I am. I just don't blast it so everybody can hear. I get with them and talk to them and explain. do I feel that I don't do the best on the follow-through? Yes. And that's one thing I'm learning now, because when I go to that person and then I don't hear that that other person is complaining anymore, then I think, okay, things have been resolved. But I don't go back to the situation and question, are, you know, how are you feeling? How are you doing? I don't do that.
Okay,
check back up.
I think you misunderstand what the point that I'm making. What I'm speaking to is about your staff team respecting you, and that they cannot be forced by an external force to respect you.
Correct.
However, I can force them to respect me via the actions that I take in regard to their job performance and their job responsibilities. They will respect that. And the actions that I take, the steps that I take, if they are not doing the things they're supposed to be doing, and are being disrespectful to me by not doing their job as I outlined, not follow through with things as I outlined, okay? And if they then take step A, no change. Step B, no change. Step C, no change. Then step D is out the door. That sends a message. That sends a message. I may not like my supervisor, but I will damn sure respect her. Why is that? Because if I don't do my job, there will be a step A, a step B, and a step C. And ultimately, step D is always hanging over my head. When I say you are responsible, that's what I mean. What you, and I've said this to every person along the years that's been in your seat, what you allow to take place, keyword is allow, you are sending a message. And so I'm saying to you in front of everyone else, okay, because this is not only a message to you, it's a message to everyone else in the room and everyone else that's going to listen to this audio, that they have a responsibility to respect not only each other as individuals, respect each other as contributing members of the team, but respect the lines of authority. And whether or not you like the person, whether or not you believe they are competent in their in the position that they're in, or whatever the case may be, your professional decorum, your professional performance should not reveal that. And the backstop to ensure that is that me as the supervisor, not being concerned with how you feel about me, but being concerned with how you're doing your job. And that you know that I'm going to hold you accountable for your job, and that you're doing your job, and that you're performing your job, and so on and so forth. And that I will take steps to enforce that. The steps accomplish two goals. Here they are. Two streets. Okay? One is behavioral change as a result of the steps I put into place. One is working my way out the door. So as I apply the steps, one of these two are going to take root. I'm going to change my behavior, do my job as directed. My attitude's going to improve. I'm on that track. Or I'm going to say, F you. I don't care what you say. I'm going to continue to do what I want to do, how I want to do it, when I want to do it. That should work your way out the door. If that doesn't happen, what you have created then is an environment, the message is, I can do what I want, say what I want, conduct myself however I want in terms of my job. Nothing's going to happen. I'm not going to get written up. I'm not going to get suspended. I'm not even going to get fired. It has to change. That doesn't mean, because I will not tolerate that, that the environment amongst a team has to be an environment of fear. Some of what we're trying to create. We're trying to create an environment of mutual respect, professionalism. Okay? We're on the same page. And no one can tell that, you know what, I really wasn't, I didn't agree with that. But for the sake of the team, I was outvoted, and I am on board. But you go out there, and you say, well, you know, it really wasn't my idea. You know, hey, you know, I'm not the one who said, you know what, this is horrible once.
The case law counselor wanted
okay.
That. That's me.
The clinical team. That's what they're doing. This has nothing to do with me. I don't agree with it, to tell you the truth. Comments like that, and they may be said innocently, subconsciously. You're not intentionally trying to divide, but that's the effect that those comments have. That's how you have to be so aware. To be aware is to be alive. We say to the clients all the time, the staff have to live by what they preach. How you conduct yourself in this facility is being watched by those clients, judged by those clients, determined, where's the split? Who's split? Who's not on board? Who is on board? What's going on between the clinical staff, the floor staff? There seems to be a schism there, a wall there. And I told, and the clinical staff were present, I told everyone that if there's a wall that's built, you're responsible for it. The legacy employees, you, Susan, you, Alan, you, Susan, Renee, Frida, Dorian, people that have been around a long time are going to be held to a higher standard. Now, granted, the longer you are around, okay, the longer frame of reference you have of how things may have been. And you may have seen multiple changes along the way. Okay? But my expectation is that because you've been around a long time and have seen multiple changes along the way, that you understand the nature of the beast. And that when change comes forth, that we all get on board. If I'm the only one on board, okay? Regardless of what Danny may witness in the meeting at the county, as frustrated as I may get at how they conduct, what they do, okay? At some point, I have to put that to the side and say, okay, what do we need to do as an organization, okay? I have to then get on board with whatever that is, and then that has to work its way down. If I'm the only one on board, and it's not reflecting itself all the way down, then what are we doing? All I'm going to do is get phone calls. Because what I'm spewing out my mouth at the meetings is what OCG is doing. And they say, well, that's not what's happening at your facility. That's not what's happening at your facility. So I, at the very least, me personally, want to be able to speak with confidence when I say, this is what's happening. This is what we're doing. This is how we're preparing. This is what we're going to be doing at this junction in time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Once I buy in, no matter how ridiculous it may be, how frustrating it may be, once I buy in, I claimed it. So you get a direction from Susan to do a particular thing. You go out on the floor, I'm just using that as an example, okay? Acting. You go out on the floor and say, okay, this is what Susan would like us to do. Rather than, okay, this is what I want us to do. You claim ownership of it, and it's coming from you. Because if you say, well, okay, this is what Orville wants us to do, guess what the family's going to do? Just like this. You know what that is? They're looking way past. They're looking way past you. Looking way past you. Because whatever's coming out your mouth, okay, it's not you. It's not something. This comes from somebody else.
Why would you think somebody would do that?
A staff person?
Yes.
Oh, that happens a lot.
Of course, I've done it before. Yeah. You know why? Because I want it to be done. Because sometimes when I say something, they lag behind like tired donkeys. Or they don't, that's where they really don't, they look over you going, shh, whatever. Especially the more difficult ones. So when I say, Susan Baker has instructed me to make sure that all the boxes are done. I need you, please, if you would do that. It gets done. It's been effective. It isn't about, because it's just about engaging in power struggles.
It undermines your authority, though.
Yeah.
But, and that's less, that's not so toxic as when it is like, well, I don't know, I mean, it was your caseload counselor's decision, or, you know, I don't know, talk to Ellen. Ellen's the one that told me about it, or, well, you know, I mean, I wouldn't have made that decision, but, you know, this is what needs to happen.
One second, I'm sorry. Do you understand what she's saying about the difference?
That's different. It just didn't seem to, your description wasn't clear.
No, what she's saying is, when you use Susan Baker as a power back to support what you're trying to get done, that's not as toxic as if you give the impression that, well, I don't agree with that, so, I mean, but Susan wants that to do so much, so I guess that's what we got to do. See, that's toxic, okay? When you use her as a power back to you, all you're doing is just undermining your own authority. Okay? At a certain point, you have to enforce your own authority so that you don't have to use the supervisor as a backstop. Because you're in the facility, if you're working on a particular shift and you find yourself by yourself, you need to feel and believe that you are the person in authority and they must respect you in that role. And they won't do that if you continue to use the backstop.
Okay, and having heard that perfectly clear, while I do that, I'm also in trying to, because it's been a problem with me, I step all over this chain thing, because I've never worked in a closed-door policy where you have to go through steps to get to something. So I'm adjusting, because I'm not perfect.
Define that. I don't understand what you just said.
Say there's an emergency with, I don't know, I need a day off. And I go to Susan, but she doesn't get a response at all. And I'm like having a, I understand, I got to get what I got to do. So the right way. And so I go to above her, not to undermine her. In my thinking, it's not undermining. It's not trying to be disrespectful. It's like, I have an emergency. I'm not being heard. Susan's trying the best she can to get me the answer, but I need to know. So when I'm on the floor and I say, Susan has instructed me, I'm trying to say that there's a chain, because I'm learning that too, and that they have a chain, that they're following the chain. I'm following my leader. You need to follow my lead. It's coming right down.
Okay, and what we're trying to explain to you is that...
I understand what you're trying to say. I'm just trying to make myself clearer.
Okay.
I don't feel that I express myself more descriptive than I should have.
Well, especially people who, and this is some of the folks listening, who aren't here as often, or they're here one shift a week, that kind of thing, it becomes even more detrimental. Not necessarily the Susan told me to, but the, you know, well...
I don't agree with this. It's a bunch of bullshit, so just do it.
Just,
yeah,
you know, well, this is the way things are done now, or... So that's one piece of it, but then it ends up looking like a lot of different things. And so the onus on the people who are here solo for a shift, even more so, is to work independently in terms of asserting authority. But the undermining part in terms of undermining supervisors and other colleagues, things like that, not just for you, but just, yeah, definitely happens more so when people are more isolated.
And also, it might be helpful to, you know, go to Susan and say, hey, you know, I'm noticing that things aren't getting done when I'm asking clients to do it. What can I do? And then Susan would say, well, did they go in the books? Did they do this and that? Then you're having a chance to build up your authority using the tools they're here in the house, because it's kind of like a given almost that they're not always going to follow your direction.
Right, and so I don't feel like they're not, they don't respect me. I mean,
so I would, and that would be one instance where I would just go to resident, like, oh, don't know what's going on, they're not, and then find a way to make it work.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I've been guilty of that too, but I've given instructions to the family, and so if there is a, I feel if there's like a buck, referring to a kid, kind of like a horse, you know what I mean, when they want to do their own thing, I've used Larry as an example, and I've said, hey, you know what, if there's a problem, if there's a situation, you can always talk to them, talk to Larry at the end, but for right now, we're going to go ahead and actually do this. I guess in certain instances that I have been a little bit, the word, not sure, I've used Larry just to get the task accomplished. But yes, I understand in regards to undermining my position. So
it's also about personal training. I mean, I've been in this field for like 13, 14 years and worked at other facilities, and some of them, you know, people have insisted, you know, do what they need to do, make sure they know who I am. So again, I have to say, I'm adjusting to a different way of leadership as well.
One thing we can do with our chief, especially new chief in the house, is we let him feel empowered. So don't tell the I say so he's done. Everything I've done, looking for something else, we can't be back behind the scene. But in order to get your legs, in order to get your you got to build it up. It's you got to build a relationship up. You got to build the respect up by saying, I need to get this done. If it's not done, that's your final answer? Great. Okay, make sure he goes and cooks. Because somebody is going to take care of and keep moving forward. Don't hang on to that. You can't physically make him do it, but never. Now, you can report back to Susan, report back to me, report back to somebody and say they refuse to do it, they don't do anything else. And then we'll address it like we've done before.
Yes.
I don't care what staff's here. The staff actually do it. This ain't your work, it's how come around. You came here on a free will. You didn't need an invitation here. You actually do it, get it done.
I agree.
It's not about me, it's whoever's staffing. Make yourself Donald Duck. We'll support you, but start with you standing your ground.
So, what time is it?
It's about 2:45.
Okay. So we've identified the behaviors that the team has been guilty of. Okay. And like I said, that we're going to mandate that change. And we're going to hold the team accountable to make sure that change takes place and that change be measurable. It will be measured by talking to the supervisor and Danny and I will be talking to her and asking her certain things that will give us information that we need to determine that the team is actually functioning the way that they should be functioning. Okay? And part of that measurement is going to be looking at how the two teams interact like this. And that wall disappears and the personal agendas behind the wall dissipate.
Well, I can start from the leaders of both teams on down then.
I'm talking to this team right now.
Do that part.
I'm talking to this team right now. Okay, they are responsible for their part of the wall. And they will be held responsible for their part of the wall. Okay? I'm going to give 90 days. That this team is on a probationary period for 90 days. Okay? To reverse its course, change its course, adjust its attitude, change its behavior, change its manner of dealing with each other, change its conduct. The whole nine yards, and start acting like a team. And then the team learns how to engage and function with another team who should be working side by side for the ultimate goal of the client. Not what my power is, not what my authority is, not what I get to decide, etc. Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Are there any concerns?
I really don't think that there's anything that you presented that can't be changed. Because we do have a strong team, and we do have people that care about the residents here. You know, they don't, everyone sitting in this room here, including Sasha, cares about the residents here, and we care about their well-being. And I think I've learned a lot of things that I myself am guilty of that will change. I am one of the well-seasoned ones, and it'll change a lot. And I think a lot of good points were brought up, excellent points being brought up about the team, this and that, and so on and so forth. I'll be more aware of when Susan Baker gives a direction to other people, that I kind of will be like, excuse me, Susan just told you to.
That's okay.
I know, but, you know, there's the, she's not here 24 hours a day, and things that do
this
happen.
Is true.
I have an very open rapport with Daryl. I have a very open rapport with this man here and this man here, where they do talk to me, and I do let Susan Baker know if it's a serious situation. Otherwise, even when we, I have talked to other parties involved that, with the staff team, I do let Susan Baker know.
We got a phone and talk to Susan before.
Yeah.
We called you up, me and Susan, mm-hmm. Say this is going on.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So I don't want, that's micros. That's micro. So I don't want.
It was a major thing.
I'm talking about the conversation right now.
I think it was very helpful.
And I would just like to say that I will be changing things. I guess in my own mind figure we're all adults, we all have been trained very well on the positions that we have, and we should have them follow through. And so I, now it's my time to do what I need to do, and I need to follow through on some things. I would like to talk to you, Orville, to get a couple suggestions from you afterwards. I just want to say that my door is open, and if you are having a problem or something's going on, please come talk to me so that I can handle it. But please make sure we're a little more patient so that we can see how things are evolving.
I was just an example.
Yeah, no. That's fine.
I want to mention, in terms of the wall and the division, you know, there's these complaints about they don't respect me, and really... You know, if I show respect to someone first, regardless of how they respond, then it's likely to happen the other way. But waiting for someone else to do something first is just, it's not helpful. So in terms of the teams and working with the teams, that's part of it too.
And my one suggestion, which I have brought to our staff meeting about the two teams, is I think it would be really great. In the past, we had them come, the new one, people that have come, whether an intern, a practicum, come into morning meeting for, you know, a week or whatever, so they could see how the TC kind of works. And I think we've kind of gotten away from that, because I have gotten some questions from the other team. Well, why are we saying it's their house? That undermines our authority. No, that's how a TC works. So, I mean, I think they can see how we work, how we interact, and how things kind of go if they do... are able to be in groups. Like, I know that Chad and Iman were in Encounter Group, and I think that was great for them to see how that goes and how that works. So just maybe so they get a little bit more. And I know that we can sit in their groups too if we want to. Or we do sit, especially the one after morning meeting. We all sit and kind of do it together. So
I just want to... thanks for the support from all the staff here. So I appreciate all the questions that I've had that have been answered and so forth, and I'm always constantly bugging you guys for answers, so I appreciate that.
It's not bugging.
No, but you know what I mean, so just saying thanks.
Thank you.
So.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. People always say it's good to unwind, but that's easier said than done. The exception, Chumba Casino. They actually make it easier done than said, or at least the same. Chumba Casino is an online social casino with hundreds of casino-style games like slots and blackjack. Play for fun. Play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sign up now and collect your free welcome bonus at chumbacasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.
Ah, the most wonderful time of the year. Although, let's be honest, around the holidays, things really add up. But here's the good news. Only at Verizon, you can get a single line for $50 per month when you switch and bring your phone. So, while ice skating for two is definitely costing more, here at Verizon, you can save. Gifts for your third cousins? Steep. A single line with Verizon? Not so steep. A real tree? Pricey. A single line with Verizon? Less pricey. Flights to see Meemaw and Pops? Those are up. A $50 per month single line? That's down. Even a trip to the San Francisco Holiday Market will cost you more. But with Verizon, you can switch and bring your phone for just $50 per month for a single line on unlimited welcome, with autopay plus taxes and fees. All this to say, during the holiday season, when everything is costing more, you can get more for less right now at a local Verizon store. $15 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G, 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.